Welcome on in. It is September 17th, this glorious Tuesday. Was enjoying a victory Monday yesterday after another black and gold victory against the Cowboys. Impressive. Now they get ready to take on the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday. We're going to be talking to Ruben Frank, who covers the Eagles for NBC Sports Philadelphia, after the first break. And man, oh man, what a night it was in Philadelphia. The Eagles went kaput last minute against the Falcons. But you know what, Charlie? The entire game, Bijan and Algier were gashing them.
Yeah, so the one play that, you know, the Eagles run D actually stepped up, C.J. Gardner-Johnson runs stuff in Bijan Robinson on 4th-and-1. And you're thinking, there's no shot the Eagles lose this game at this point. They get the ball in their own in the Falcons' territory with, what was it, like 6 minutes left to go. Just run out the clock and be over with it. You don't even need to score at that point. And then they figure out a way to lose. You know, 3rd-and-3. And then they try and throw it to Saquon Barkley in the flat. And of the 5 targets that he had last night, that was the only one that he dropped. And it ended up being the crucial mistake, because they end up having to settle for 3, and the ball gets back to Atlanta, and then Kirk Cousins goes down the field in 3 plays.
And Kirk hadn't looked great all night except for that final drive. He turned it on then. I got to give him credit.
No, he started lighting them up. It, like I said with Mike earlier, it was a hot knife through butter. And so
prevent defense prevents you from winning.
Exactly. The Eagles snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Whereas we could be talking about a 2-0 Eagles squad heading to New Orleans for a really fun matchup this upcoming weekend. And it still will be a good
one. Right, for sure.
But as far as, you know, we had a text that came in. Let's see here. Guys, is there anything in what you saw with Atlanta last night that scares you? The one thing that kind of, and we'll talk a little bit about their skill position players and stuff like that, and their safety tandem, which is still very elite. The thing that worries me the most is that this is a lifeline to Atlanta. They were staring 0-2 dead in the eye.
And then they're at Kansas City
this coming
weekend.
And then they play Kansas City.
Right.
In week 3, and then they play the Saints.
You could have buried them early.
Exactly. The Saints had a golden opportunity to potentially bury an 0-3 Atlanta squad, but now they're 1-1, and the difference is gigantic, because now their season isn't going to be over within the first few weeks. So, you know, the lifeline was given from Nick Sirianni and the Eagles to Atlanta, and now they're not out of it. I know that it sounds like hyperbole after a couple weeks, but there is really a big gap. And that is a huge win for their season, given what happened in week 1 with the Steelers. Because, I mean, if you're a Falcons fan, you're looking at that early schedule. You're playing Justin Fields and the Steelers. That's probably one of the easier games early on for them. Instead, you know, they lose that game. They were staring 0-2 dead in the eyes, and now they're 1-1. So,
yeah, from last night, I definitely didn't like, obviously, seeing Kirk Cousins in that final drive finally turn things on. Hopefully he's not, you know, gaining confidence or, you know, getting into a groove now, because he didn't look impressive for most of the game. And then obviously that running back duo of Bijan Robinson and Algier are pretty impressive and scary for the Falcons. And I'll say this, I didn't realize, man, how big Drake London is.
Yeah, no, that was the comp was Mike Evans when he was coming out.
Yeah, definitely looked it.
So exactly. And so that was one thing that kind of surprised me a little bit about the Falcons offense, is that, you know, if you're looking at Kirk Cousins and the weapons that they have around him, you would imagine that they're getting the ball out to, Kyle Pitts and Drake London.
Pitts still not a factor, I feel like.
Still not really that much of a factor. And neither really was Drake London until the end.
Right.
Like, he catches the game-winning touchdown, and everything's fine and dandy. But, I mean, Darnell Mooney had the same amount of targets as he did.
Too late.
Yeah, right, exactly. But also, like, Ray McCloud had more targets than Kyle Pitts. I mean, what? It's just kind of surprising. But Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier, it's always been a really solid, you know, running back one, running back two combo. That's obviously pretty scary. But like we talked about, the inverse, right? Because, yes, that scares me as a Saints person. But at the same time, for this upcoming matchup against the Eagles rushing defense didn't look any good.
No.
So, I mean, the way the Saints rushing offenses look so far, that seems like a mismatch.
And I'm pretty sure the Falcons' run defense wasn't impressive either. I think Saquon had some pretty good runs. And obviously, you saw Jalen Hurts take off sometimes.
So I was telling this to Mike earlier. The Falcons finished, if you take out Kirk Cousins' 4 attempts for -1 yards, because it doesn't matter. You have 24 carries for 153 yards, which is 6.4 yards per carry. That will play anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And then on the opposite side, if you're looking at what the Eagles were able to accomplish against Atlanta's defense, they had 37 rushing attempts for 186 yards, 5 yards per carry. Now, Jalen Hurts averaged 6.5 yards per carry. Saquon Barkley had 22 attempts, 95 yards, 4.3 yards per carry. The rushing offense for both of these two teams was really stout. at the same time, the rushing defense for these two teams wasn't very good either. It was kind of a mixture of both. It was like a 50-50 split there. Now, also another thing that stood out to me about the Eagles, and we'll talk with, you know, Ruben Frank here in a little bit, their pass rush was non-existent against Atlanta and Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is a statue.
All day he had.
He had so much time. And that's like the one thing, if you can affect him and get after him, he can't move because he's still coming off that Achilles injury. So that was the way for the Eagles to just kind of dominate defensively, and they couldn't get anything going against that Atlanta offensive line. I know the Falcons have a good front, but there was nothing in terms of pass rush from the Eagles last night. So the offensive line for the Saints that's been playing very well, once again, kind of seems like a potential mismatch.
Yeah, the texter was asking, you know, anything, you know, worry you about, scare you from Atlanta last night. For the Eagles, the only thing that scares me is still Jalen Hurts, obviously, because the Saints have had so many troubles against mobile quarterbacks, including Hurts, who has gone off against his team before.
And Mike made a good point about that, though, Steve. Keep an eye on Willie Gay this weekend.
Oh, for sure.
That's part of the reason
why
they got
in, yeah.
Exactly. That's part of the reason why they got someone that came with that type of speed at the linebacker position, is specifically for quarterbacks like Jalen Hurts that have kind of challenged the Saints defensively in the past. And people will say, you know, Dennis Allen's kryptonite has been those type of running quarterbacks as far as a defensive play caller goes. We'll see what happens this upcoming weekend, because obviously Jalen still wants to use his legs. He did it last night. I mean, 13 carries for 85 yards, 6.5 yards per carry. He was gashing the Falcons himself. So we'll see.
Yeah, you saw too, I think, how much this Eagles offense missed A.J. Brown, who I would not count in for this game or this interview during the Monday Night Football matchup, basically saying he's going to be on the shelf dealing with a hamstring injury. So it doesn't sound like he's going to be around for Sunday in the Dome.
He said he was going to be out for multiple weeks.
Right.
So that's coming from the horse's mouth. I imagine that he's probably not going to be playing, which means that Devontae Smith is going to be the guy. And Devontae Smith, even, you know, without his number one next to him and A.J. Brown, he still proved why he's an elite receiver in the league. 10 targets, 7 catches, 76 yards, and a touchdown. I mean, he still did his thing last night, Steve. And if you're talking about the players that scare you from the Eagles offensively, I mean, Jalen Hurts obviously has gotten off against the Saints multiple times.
Right.
But in that receiving core, without A.J. Brown available, it's Devontae.
Right, for sure.
So you're going to have to use bracket coverage on him. Make sure.
Even I like Dallas Goedert, but I don't think he's that impressive where you can't, you know, I'm not going to say shut him down, but you can't contain him.
Yeah, I mean, it also starts with Saquon Barkley, too. Like yes, the Eagles rushing attack, if you can keep it bottled up, I mean, there's not much they can do.
Looking at the Eagles defense, we did get to see two familiar faces and names being called quite often. C.J. Gardner-Johnson out there, and also Zach Bourne, who I feel like is having a renaissance in this Eagles defense. Week one, too, had a lot of tackles and just
multiple sacks, too.
Yeah, impressive to see what he's able to do now. I guess a new scenery is doing him well in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and both of them did well. I mean, Zach Bourne finished with 9 tackles. C.J. Gardner-Johnson finished with 6. And, I mean, like I mentioned, that run stuff on Bijan Robinson.
Right,
on
you thought that was the cherry on top for
I
sure.
Thought that was it. And you know, it's funny because his helmet came off on that play, and they were able to convince the refs that he didn't just yank, like rip it off.
Right, I wasn't throwing it.
I think that he was pulling his helmet off. I don't know, maybe it started to come off a little bit in the
right.
play,
and then he just went with the
but
momentum.
I think he was just
it.
Fired up
for
I think
sure.
he was yanking it off to talk his trash. He got another punch thrown at him last night, by the way. I mean, that dude's got to have a record for trash talk.
We need a mic'd up session with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, just because I am dying to know what he's saying.
Yeah, what is he saying to get these people so mad? It's so funny. So, yeah, C.J. coming back to New Orleans should be fun, too. But a couple of big plays for the Eagles defense last night. But I'll tell you, man, the two-minute drill, it's not even really a two-minute drill because it was like a 45-second drill
yes,
from Kirk Cousins last
exactly.
night. Between that and their rushing defense, there's some holes that the Saints can exploit in week 3, I would say, in the Superdome. It's not, you know, it's not like the Eagles are bringing a vaunted defense that you're terrified of coming in. They have some issues.
That's what I was wondering. I'm just like, where is this pass rush?
It was nowhere to be seen.
So no pass rush and shoddy run defense bodes well definitely for New Orleans early on as their look at things. We're going to get more into the Philadelphia Eagles with Ruben Frank after the first break. He's covering the Eagles for NBC Sports Philadelphia. Get his take on Monday Night Football. And, of course, the one-on-one Eagles come into the Dome on Sunday. Be back with more sports talk. So stay tuned right after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, we're talking Saints versus Eagles coming up on Sunday. Happy to welcome in Ruben Frank, who covers the Eagles for NBC Sports Philadelphia. How you been, Ruben? I know, rough Monday Night Football for Philly.
Yeah, it was a tough one, and it was kind of like last year all over again. They blew three leads after the two-minute warning last year, and they did it again. So certainly not what anybody was looking for from the home opener on a night they were honoring Nick Foles, Super Bowl hero. So definitely a very disappointing evening.
Definitely disappointing to see the pass rush, I feel like, of the Eagles, and then the run defense. Those were two things really stood out as a sore spot for Philly.
Yeah, I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. Those are the two areas, and they were two areas we really had some questions about coming into the season. Their edge rushers don't have a sack. In fact, their edge rushers have gone six straight games without a sack going back to last year. That's the longest streak. And I spent about an hour looking this one up. It's the longest streak in history, in franchise history. And the run defense, they're, I think, the seventh team in history to allow 6.5 yards per carry through two games. I mean, the numbers are staggering. I mean, teams are just pushing them around up front. It wasn't that long ago the defensive front was the strength of this team. And to see what it's become is really, really concerning.
Concerning, I would imagine, too, is the head coach, Nick Sirianni. I saw something funny going into the season. It was like they've got the Eagles going from anywhere to the Super Bowl from Nick Sirianni being the first head coach fired this season. And I know the seat's got to be kind of hot for him considering how things fell apart last year. And then in this game to see another collapse definitely doesn't help his stock.
Yeah, and you know, you're talking about a guy who went into the game with the 11th highest winning percentage in history by a head coach. But you're right, because when you start losing games like this over and over, you know, owners don't take too kindly to that. And they're big on culture and all that stuff. And when your culture is blowing big leads late in games, yeah, it doesn't matter what you did. I mean, 2 years ago, it was a long time ago. 19 months ago, this team played in a Super Bowl and almost beat the Chiefs. But, you know, that's ancient history in football. That's how these things go. And I think if Nick makes the playoffs this year, his job is safe. Jeff Lurie's not one owner. Jeff Lurie's not one to fire coaches who made the playoffs four straight years, where he'd be, you know, one of a very few number of coaches in history to do that. But if this keeps happening, yeah, there's bound to be a change if he can't turn this around.
Ruben, I just want to highlight, you know, dating back to that Super Bowl run that was so magical, Jonathan Gannon and Shane Steichen, who are now obviously the head coaches of Arizona and Indianapolis, respectively, the DC and the OC of that Eagles squad. I mean, how big of a loss really was that? Because you saw, you know, last year the Eagles got off to a red-hot start without those guys, but then when it got down to crunch time and, you know, December and late in the year, it's just where this kind of, I mean, what is it now, 2-7 in their last nine games? It's where that kind of all started.
Exactly. Yeah, well, that's a great question. It's a great point because they were both exceptional. You see what Gannon's doing in Arizona. I mean,
absolutely.
I thought the Colts would be really, really good this year. So I kind of missed on that one. But Gannon's a terrific coach. Steichen's a tremendous offensive coordinator. And and not only did they miss those guys when they took head coaching jobs after the Super Bowl, but they replaced them with, no, two guys who are decent position coaches but just weren't ready to become coordinators. They're both young guys, first-time coordinators, and it didn't work out. And so they went from, you know, I think, two really exceptional coordinators in 22 to two rookie coordinators who were overmatched and weren't able to make adjustments as the year went on. And I think that's why you saw the collapse at the end of the year. They just became so predictable, and they didn't have coaches who could kind of bust them out of those trends. So I think they did well with Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio this year, but they got to do it on the field.
Looking at that game last night, too, an interview with A.J. Brown, I think he had Eagles fans and fantasy football owners' mouths on the floor when he just came out and said basically his hamstring injury is going to keep him out multiple weeks. What's this Philly, you know, wide receiving group looking like without an A.J. Brown in the mix? Obviously, I know Devonta Smith now becomes your number one guy.
Yeah, and he was kind of 1A anyway. I mean, he's terrific, but they just don't have anybody else. And think this was really kind of a personnel failing by the GM, Howie Roseman, because, you know, he hitched his wagon to two guys in training camp who were kind of fighting for that third outside receiver spot, Paris Campbell and John Ross. So two kind of reclamation projects, guys who had been failures as high picks. And they tried to kind of rejuvenate their careers, and it didn't work. And they weren't very good, and they didn't make the team. Paris Campbell's on the practice squad now. But the problem is they went out and they traded a third-round pick to Washington for Jahan Dotson.
Yeah.
But by the time they got him, camp was over. Opening day was like a week and a half away. He doesn't know the offense. He's not ready. Played 56 snaps yesterday, had 6 yards and one target. So he's not ready. So, you know, they played four receivers other than Devontae last night, and they totaled 23 yards. Now, that's not ideal. And it just makes them so much easier to defend. If they had a legitimate second threat at wideout, you know, at least you can keep defenses honest. But it's basically he's either throwing to Goddard, to Saquon, or to Devontae. And, you know, Kellen Moore's big on spreading the ball around to everybody. It's just tough to do that when you don't have viable two, three, and four receivers.
Ruben, looking up front, the offensive line, obviously losing a future potential first ballot Hall of Famer and someone like Jason Kelce, and replacing him with Cam Jurgens, a third-year player, a former second-round pick. What have you kind of seen from – because we always talk about the offensive line, and when you really highlight the center spot, the quarterback, so to speak, of the offensive line, so much revolves around the center, and you obviously have to have a good one. I mean, Philadelphia had an elite one for so many years, but what's kind of the early kind of takeaway from what you've seen so far from Cam Jurgens?
Yeah, Jason Kelce's really been maintaining a low profile since he retired.
No kidding, huh?
He was outside the link tailgating with fans yesterday and all that. He's been great with Cam. He's been really helpful. He's around. He's in the building a lot. He actually helped scout Cam Jurgens when he was in Nebraska. He kind of worked with Jeff Stoutland, the O-line coach, and the personnel department, finding a center who was similar to him as far as size and athleticism and power. And Cam Jurgens has handled this. And I think when you're following a Hall of Famer, it's like a twofold challenge. A, you got to be a good player, but you also have to deal with the expectations and people, oh, he's following Jason Kelce. And that's a hard thing to do. You know, following any superstar all-timer, like you said, probably a first ballot Hall of Famer, he's handled that beautifully. I think he's done a good job. The O-line's been one of the few kind of bright spots on this team. They're very, very good. Mekhi Becton coming in at right guard, a position he's never played before. But Cam's been really good, as advertised. A couple illegal man downfield penalties that they got to get cleaned up, but that's more kind of procedural than play. He's been terrific.
Talking to Ruben Frank, who covers the Eagles for NBC Sports Philadelphia, and a name definitely been hearing a lot from Philly's defense. Game one, game two, Zach Bond, former Saint, we know him well here, and seems to really be fitting in with that defense, though.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the first day of OTAs, we saw Zach Bond at off-ball linebacker, and we're like, what are they doing? He's kind of an edge rusher. That's why we thought they'd bring him in as like a rotational edge rushing piece. But Vic Fangio had seen him play a handful of snaps with the Saints at off-ball linebacker and liked what he saw and kind of projected that he could play that position. And he's been good. A couple of missed tackles last night, but I think everybody had a couple of those. Interesting move, kind of unusual scouting to make the position change that he's made, but yeah. He's played well. He's been one of the few bright spots on defense, and you know they've got a lot of questions at linebacker. I mean, he's on a 1-year deal, so we'll see what they do if they want to keep him. But he's played really well. Good guy and plays hard. He's a very tough guy, more athletic than I expected, and he's been really good.
What about the defensive backfield, Ruben? And I just want to highlight Quinyon Mitchell, the first-round pick out of Toledo, taken 22nd overall this past year. I mean, what have you seen so far from him as they kind of try to bolster the defensive backfield?
Yeah, and they took corners with their first two picks.
Yeah,
they really
DeGene
have to
well.
Do that. Yeah, Cooper DeJean from Iowa. So they're, you know, the first time in franchise history they've taken D-backs with two of the first 40 picks. So they were the worst or second worst behind Washington, but kind of the worst secondary statistically in the NFL last year. They had to address it, and they got CJ, GJ, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson back. And I think they've got some really good young guys, and Quinyon has been terrific. He kind of carries himself like a veteran, plays like a veteran. He got beat last night for the first time as a pro. That's going to happen to every corner. We saw it happen to Slay at the end of the game. But I think they've got something in both these kids, DeGene and Quinyon Mitchell. And, you know, there's questions about level of play when you're coming out of, you know, Toledo. What are they? I don't even know. Are they in the MAC probably?
Yes.
There's going to be questions about level of competition, but he hasn't backed down. And, you know, every day in practice, he's going up against AJ and Devontae. AJ when he's healthy, obviously. But he's really impressive, and he's just going to get better. They just haven't drafted. You know, they've kind of had all these veteran corners coming and going, and some have been decent, some have been not so good, but they really haven't addressed it with a young, homegrown player. And they did it twice in this draft, so I think they're in good shape there.
Ruben, one thing Saints fans didn't like to see last night was Jalen Hurts. Looks like he is running the ball as well as he has in the past. I know I think he was nicked up towards the end of last year, so you didn't really see him taking off so much. But there were some moments last night that I know Dennis Allen defenses have had trouble with mobile quarterbacks, and that's certainly a concern Sunday in the Superdome.
Yeah, well, you know, the Eagles might have to score 50 to be in the game with him. But, yeah, we hadn't seen that from Jalen really since the middle of 22, that kind of explosiveness and elusiveness. You're right. He was never on the injury report last year, but he was not healthy late in the season, and it showed. I mean, he looked sluggish. He looked slow. We don't know. He won't tell us what was bothering him, what the issue was, whether it was a foot or ankle or knee. But, yeah, it was the best he's looked. 85 yards rushing, 6 first downs rushing. And when you're missing AJ, you need every possible weapon. And I think it was really encouraging to see the way he ran because, yeah, that really changes how defenses have to play you. And you have to account for him. Now all of a sudden you're taking somebody away in coverage or elsewhere. So, yeah, that was good to see. It really kind of came out of the blue because he hasn't done that in so long. So we'll see if he can sustain it.
Ruben Frank, who covers the Eagles for NBC Sports Philadelphia, check out all his great work. Definitely appreciate the time and hopefully be seeing you in the Dome on Sunday.
You got it. Anytime.
Thanks, Ruben.
Like I said, Ruben Frank, you can follow him on Twitter at R-O-O-B, Rube, N-B-C-S. We're going to come back with, after the break, listening to what Alante Taylor had to say in the Saints locker room yesterday as the black and gold get ready for their Week 3 matchup against those pesky Philadelphia Eagles. Coming back with more right after this on Sports Talk. Stay tuned. Welcome back into Sports Talk. After these final minutes here in the 6 o'clock hour, we'll be going to the Saints Hour at 7 o'clock. Mike Hoss, the voice of the Saints, along with Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis, will be on the show, also featuring former defensive end Chris Long and former offensive lineman / NFL Network / Odyssey NFL insider Brian Bolden on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Can't wait to tune into that one. Looking at the Saints, man, first 2 games, who's the leader in tackles on the squad? Alante Taylor coming into a big year 3 for Alante. The corner's got 15 total tackles on the year, leads the team with 3 sacks. He's also got 5 tackles for loss and has just looked like a player on fire going into year 3. We caught up with him in the locker room yesterday, and here's a little bit of what he had to say as the Saints get ready to play the Eagles.
Anything behind how hard you guys are hitting that comes when you're feeling good?
No, I think everybody's just playing to the standard that we've set so far. And, you know, it's a week in, a week out thing. I think we just got to take it one day at a time, continue to do that. I think we enjoyed this last one, this last couple hours. And I think now our mindsets are shifting to Philly. And like I said, as long as we keep taking care of business one day at a time, one play at a time, we're going to just keep playing New Orleans Saints defense.
I'm sure you saw a lot of the reaction from fans, not only here, but second line and in Dallas and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Like, just to see that and maybe see how this community has responded with all that they've been through this week, like, just kind of what does that mean?
It means a lot. You know, that just means, you know, New Orleans is just a relentless place. The fans travel. They show a lot of love. And any game in Texas has kind of been that way. I know we played Houston last year. The fans traveled. But, you know, New Orleans is strong, and you kind of see that resiliency within them to go through what we went through with the hurricane, but then also travel and go to the game. But they were definitely second lining, and I was watching those videos. It felt pretty good.
How much points the offense is putting up take some of the pressure off of the defense and allow you guys to be more aggressive?
A lot of pressure. I feel like, you know, when you have a team who you just want to get the ball back to them so they can go and score, helps us out and takes the pressure off of us just to try to get off the field on third down. But the offense was rolling. I like to say that they were rolling so good that they bailed us out in times, right? Like Dallas was driving the ball on us, getting in field goal range. But if we're not putting up points on that side of the ball, maybe the score is 9-0, 9-3. So, you know, offense on the road helps us. And I think, you know, when we get on the road, it also helps the offense.
It's been talked about a good bit during camp, but facing off against this offense with this new scheme, how much has that really sharpened you guys in an iron sharpening iron way to go against other teams?
It was good. You know, we kind of talk about the motions, eye discipline, flying around, extending plays after the snap. But this helped us a lot, and you know, we're thankful for that. And going up against, you know, Chris Olave, guys like that, you're not going to find many guys in the league who are running that fast and running this type of offense. So when we do face different offenses, I feel like we have a good advantage to them.
What were you thinking? You see Derek Carr going deep for Rasheed on that second touchdown?
Hey, do it. Like, let it go. I mean, we see it in practice every week. And to see DC sit in the pocket and believe that she's going to run the route the right way and deliver that good ball, hey, we'll take that every single time. On the sideline, I know we'd be turned. So,
you know, getting ready for Philly, what are your initial thoughts about them?
You know, they got great weapons over there with Jalen, you know, picking up Saquon, a great runner back who uses his legs a lot. And then, you know, you talk about Smitty and A.J. Brown and, you know, Dotson that they just picked up from Washington. You know, he's had a lot of spark and positive things in the league so far. So, you know, we can't forget about him. We got to make sure we check all of our boxes and we just go out there and play ball.
How much with Jalen is it about, like, making sure that he doesn't get loose with his legs as much as maybe throwing the ball?
That's a lot. I mean, he's a great quarterback, a guy who can, like you said, use his legs. I think the biggest thing for us is just containing him and putting our eyes in the right place. And, I mean, you kind of watch our defense. We fly around like we've been flying around, man. I think that we'll take care of anything when it comes to scramble drills.
Saints corner Alante Taylor speaking to the media in the locker room on Monday. Black and gold getting ready for a tough matchup. You talked of the last question about Jalen Hurts and those rushing yards. We know all too well, Charlie, mobile quarterbacks have been the bane of a Dennis Allen defense.
I love that response, though, from Alante. Just like when we're flying around like this, though, don't matter. We're gonna wrap them up. So
you definitely feel the swagger, the confidence dripping off of him.
Yeah, but also, you know, I said this to you while we were listening to it. Complimentary football,
right?
You know, all sides are performing, and he was talking about like the offense was picking them up because they were letting Dallas go down the field. But being a bend don't break unit against an elite offense like the Cowboys have, I mean, that's fine. You were trading 3-for-7. You take that any day of the week. So yeah, I mean, it was interesting stuff from Alante. Obviously, Dennis Allen was just very, very high on him in that interview we did with him during the Saints coaches show.
Yeah.
Just talking about the leap that he's made from year 2 to 3. I mean, Bobby called him a dog for a reason. 13 solo tackles. I think it's top 10 in the NFL right now. He is a dog at DB for the Saints.
We're going to be right back after a break to wrap things up. Want to hear from any of you on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line 504-260-1870. JD in Mississippi, I see you. We'll get to you coming back right after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk, getting ready to close things out and hand things off to the Saints Hour with the voice of the Saints, Mike Hawes, coming up next here at 7 o'clock. Want to get into our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. JD in Mississippi, waiting patiently. How you doing, man?
Man, it's more fun to listen to y'all just holding my phone. It keeps me focused, man. Thank
you.
Y'all.
Appreciate you,
Mike,
JD.
Mike and Steve. Yes, sir. Man, the national media is back on our bandwagon. And some of, like, it's fun and all, but we knew we had good running backs. We went out and got our quarterback. We didn't hire Dennis Allen in spite of what he did for the Raiders. We hired him because of what he did for us. I mean, he's got skins on the walls in games. And the national media, they don't know this. They focus on the Jets and the Cowboys. And here they come again. And if we win this week, it's going to blow the doors off. And you think about things different when you sit here and wait on your phone call. Y'all said I got 3 minutes. But this team feels different. And it looks like something we saw in years past.
Yes, sir.
That looked real good. It just feels different. And this is what I wanted to end it with. You know, we've been recovering from a Super Bowl coach and a Hall of Fame quarterback. God love them both. We injected a little bit of new offense with Kubiak. He's got what we had already working going in the right direction. And this feels like Gale Benson's team. God bless everybody before us. But this team feels like something new and awesome. And this team feels like all the old ghosts that we love are gone. This feels like Gale Benson's team. And, hey, I'm excited about it.
No, I mean, echo the sentiments of a lot of Saints fans, too. A lot of the Who Dat Nation's really fired up after, you know, the national media, to your point, JD, all you heard was that this team was going to be bottom four, like one of the worst teams.
Going to have a top five pick, right?
And a lot of the local media was a little bit more tempered as well. We're all saying, like, you know, expect maybe anywhere from 8-9 to 10-7, right? Like, generally in that direction. And it is 2 weeks, so we do still have to pull things back a little bit. I just think it's hilarious when you see people, and I don't want to really call anyone out by name because I don't think that's very professional, but people that were saying, oh, the Saints were going to be 2-15, or they were going to finish last in the division behind Carolina.
Oh, they've already apologized.
But it's just stupid. It's just like, where was this coming from? Like, why did everyone think the Saints were just going to fall off a cliff completely? Now, if they said, like, they were going to be average again, sure, that's one thing. But all the national media folks that were saying this was going to be one of the bottom five teams in the NFL, they're very quickly eating their crow. And I just remember what Deuce said during the Deuce's Dime segment of, you know, the postgame yesterday. Keep referring to us as the redheaded stepchild. Don't pay attention to us. Let's just do our thing. Like, let's stay in the corner and we'll just keep on winning. That's all that matters.
More of the black and gold coming up next right here on the Saints Hour. Stay tuned on WWL and the Odyssey app. Good night. Welcome back into Sports Talk. After these final minutes here in the 6 o'clock hour, we'll be going to the Saints Hour at 7 o'clock. Mike Hoss, the voice of the Saints, along with Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis, will be on the show, also featuring former defensive end Chris Long and former offensive lineman / NFL Network / Odyssey NFL insider Brian Boldinger on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Can't wait to tune into that one. Looking at the Saints, man, first two games, who's the leader in tackles on the squad? Alante Taylor, coming into a big year three for Alante. The corner's got 15 total tackles on the year, leads the team with 3 sacks. He's also got 5 tackles for loss and has just looked like a player on fire going into year three. We caught up with him in the locker room yesterday, and here's a little bit of what he had to say as the Saints get ready to play the Eagles.
Anything behind how hard you guys are hitting that comes when you're feeling good?
No, I think everybody's just playing to the standard that we've set so far. And, you know, it's a week in and week out thing. I think we just got to take it one day at a time, continue to do that. I think we enjoyed this last one, this last couple hours. And I think now our mindsets are shifting to Philly. And like I said, as long as we keep taking care of business one day at a time, one play at a time, we're going to just keep playing New Orleans Saints defense.
I'm sure you saw a lot of the reaction from fans, not only here, but second line and in Dallas and whatnot. Like, just to see that and maybe see how this community has responded with all that they've been through this week, like, just kind of what does that mean?
It means a lot. You know, that just means, you know, New Orleans is just a relentless place. The fans travel. They show a lot of love. And any game in Texas has kind of been that way. I know we played Houston last year. The fans traveled. But, you know, New Orleans is strong, and you kind of see that resiliency within them to go through what we went through with the hurricane, but then also travel and go to the game. But they were definitely second lining, and I was watching those videos. It felt pretty good.
How much points the offense is putting up take some of the pressure off of the defense and allow you guys to be more aggressive?
A lot of pressure. I feel like, you know, when you have a team who you just want to get the ball back to them so they can go and score, helps us out and takes the pressure off of us just to try to get off the field on third down. But the offense was rolling, and I like to say that they were rolling so good that they bailed us out in times, right? Like, Dallas was driving the ball on us, getting in field goal range, but if we're not putting up points on that side of the ball, maybe the score is 9-0, 9-3. So, you know, offense on the road helps us, and I think, you know, when we get on the road, it also helps the offense.
It's been talked about a good bit during camp, but facing off against this offense with this new scheme, how much has that really sharpened you guys in an iron-sharpening iron way to go against other teams?
It was good. You know, we kind of talk about the motions, eye discipline, flying around, extending plays after the snap, but this helped us a lot, and you know, we're thankful for that. And going up against, you know, Chris Olave, guys like that, you're not going to find many guys in the league who are running that fast and running this type of offense. So when we do face different offenses, I feel like we have a good advantage to them.
What were you thinking? You see Derek Carr going deep for Rasheed on that second touchdown.
Hey, do it. Like, let it go. I mean, we see it in practice every week. And to see DC sit in the pocket and believe that she's going to run the route the right way and deliver that good ball, hey, we'll take that every single time. On the sideline, I know we'd be turned. So,
you know, getting ready for Philly, what are your initial thoughts about them?
You know, they got great weapons over there with Jalen, you know, picking up Saquon, a great runner back who uses his legs a lot. And then, you know, you talk about Smitty and A.J. Brown and, you know, Dotson that they just picked up from Washington. You know, he's had a lot of spark and positive things in the league so far. So, you know, we can't forget about him. We got to make sure we check all of our boxes and we just go out there and play ball.
How much with Jalen is it about, like, making sure that he doesn't get loose with his legs as much as maybe throwing the ball?
That's a lot. I mean, he's a great quarterback, a guy who can, like you said, use his legs. I think the biggest thing for us is just containing him and putting our eyes in the right place. And, I mean, you kind of watch our defense. We fly around like we've been flying around, man. I think that we'll take care of anything when it comes to scramble drills.
Saints corner Alante Taylor speaking to the media in the locker room on Monday. Black and gold getting ready for a tough matchup. You talked of the last question about Jalen Hurts and those rushing yards. We know all too well, Charlie, mobile quarterbacks have been the bane of a Dennis Allen defense.
I love that response, though, from Alante. Just like when we're flying around like this, though, don't matter. We're gonna wrap him up. So
you definitely feel the swagger, the confidence dripping off of him.
Yeah, but also, you know, I said this to you while we were listening to it. Complimentary football,
right?
You know, all sides are performing, and he was talking about like the offense was picking them up because they were letting Dallas go down the field. But being a bend don't break unit against an elite offense like the Cowboys have, I mean, that's fine. You were churning 3-for-7. You take that any day of the week. So yeah, I mean, it was interesting stuff from Alante. Obviously, Dennis Allen was just very, very high on him in that interview we did with him during the Saints coaches show.
Yeah.
Just talking about the leap that he's made from year 2 to 3. I mean, Bobby called him a dog for a reason. 13 solo tackles. I think it's top 10 in the NFL right now. He is a dog at DB for the Saints.
We're going to be right back after a break to wrap things up. Want to hear from any of you on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line 504-260-1870. JD in Mississippi, I see you. We'll get to you coming back right after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk, getting ready to close things out and hand things off to the Saints Hour with the voice of the Saints, Mike Hawes, coming up next here at 7 o'clock. Want to get into our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. JD in Mississippi, waiting patiently. How you doing, man?
Man, it's more fun to listen to y'all just holding my phone. It keeps me focused, man. Thank you, y'all.
Appreciate you,
Mike,
JD.
Mike and Steve. Yes, sir. Man, the national media is back on our bandwagon. And some of, like, it's fun and all, but we knew we had good running backs. But we went out and got our quarterback. We didn't hire Dennis Allen in spite of what he did with the Raiders. We hired him because of what he did for us. I mean, he's got skins on the walls and games. And the national media, they don't know this. They focus on the Jets and the Cowboys. And here they come again. And if we win this week, it's going to blow the doors off. And you think about things different when you sit here and wait on your phone call. Y'all said I got 3 minutes. But this team feels different. And it looks like something we saw in years past.
Yes, sir.
That looked real good. It just feels different. And this is what I wanted to end it with. You know, we've been recovering from a Super Bowl coach and a Hall of Fame quarterback. God love them both. We injected a little bit of new offense with Kubiak. He's got what we had already working going in the right direction. And this feels like Gail Benson's team. God bless everybody before us. But this team feels like something new and awesome. And this team feels like all the old ghosts that we love are gone. This feels like Gail Benson's team. And, I'm excited about it.
No, I mean, echo the sentiments of a lot of Saints fans, too. A lot of the Houdat Nation's really fired up after, you know, the national media, to your point, JD. All you heard was that this team was going to be bottom four, like one of the worst teams.
Going to have a top five pick, right?
And a lot of the local media was a little bit more tempered as well. We're all saying, like, you know, expect maybe anywhere from 8-9 to 10-7, right? Like, generally in that direction. And it is 2 weeks, so we do still have to pull things back a little bit. I just think it's hilarious when you see people, and I don't want to really call anyone out by name because I don't think that's very professional, but people that were saying, oh, the Saints were going to be 2-15, or they were going to finish last in the division behind Carolina.
Oh, they've already apologized.
But it's just stupid. It's just like, where was this coming from? Like, why did everyone think the Saints were just going to fall off a cliff completely? Now, if they said, like, they were going to be average again, sure, that's one thing. But all the national media folks that were saying this was going to be one of the bottom five teams in the NFL, they're very quickly eating their crow. And I just remember what Deuce said during the Deuce's Dime segment of, you know, the post game yesterday. Keep referring to us as the redheaded stepchild. Don't pay attention to us. Don't pay attention to us. Let's just do our thing. Like, let's stay in the corner and we'll just keep on winning. That's all that matters.
More of the black and gold coming up next right here on the Saints Hour. Stay tuned on WWL and the Odyssey app. Good night.